Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky, back with Savitsky Talks, and today we have Timothy Litton, and Timothy is a professor of law at Albany Law School, and he's actually written an article for the Jewish Action called The Guru of Kashrus, Rabbi Alexander S. Rosenberg, and the Transformation of Kosher Certification in America. Welcome to the program. Very nice to have you on.
Thank you.
So you wrote this article, and I read it, and it sounds like there was a time when kashrus was like the Wild West.
Yes, if you go back about 100 years ago, and in fact between about 1850 to 1950, kosher meat production was actually full of fraud and corruption. It was really a terrible mess. And possibly the most famous case was the famous shooting of Bernard Bath, or Baruch Bath. Baruch Bath was a poultry distributor, a kosher poultry distributor in Manhattan, and there was a group that organized a poultry distribution organization, and they organized a racket. They forced kosher butchers to carry certain poultry from certain wholesalers, and any butcher that didn't conform to this plan would have stores set up next to his, or he might be driven out of business, or worse things could happen. So Baruch Bath turned state's evidence against this organization of the poultry distributors, and they convicted these guys, and they went to jail. And after he turned state's evidence and the trial occurred, his chickens were poisoned, and his horse was poisoned, and at a certain point, his house was firebombed. And finally, one day in 1914, he was actually gunned down in a drive-by shooting in the Washington Market, the kosher poultry markets in Manhattan. They didn't solve the murder for many years, and of course everybody thought that the murderers were connected with the poultry distributors. It turns out that the competing butcher shops in the Washington Market, 100 of them each ponied up $100 to hire a hitman to shoot this guy, because Bath had, after he turned state's evidence, tied up all of the poultry distribution, and he became, you know, the main poultry distributor, and they resented the competition. So that was a sort of typical story of corruption back in the early 1900s, and the level of fraud was also very high. The city of New York estimated that about half of the kosher meat that was sold, or sold as kosher in the city of New York, was actually treif meat. So kosher, yeah, 100 years ago, was really a major center for consumer fraud and organized crime.
So when you read this now, so I presume the people then who actually ponied up the money to gun Baruch Bath down were Jewish.
Yes, these were kosher. These were Jewish poultry merchants. They had little shops in the Washington Market, which was the main kosher market in the city of Manhattan, and they basically, it's like the Murder on the Orient Express. They each ponied up a little bit of money. They hired a gangster, and he drove by, a bunch of them drove by in a car in the middle of the day, and they gunned him down. It turns out that Dewey, who was later the governor of New York, was the chief prosecutor in Manhattan at the time. And on the top three list of organized crime problems in New York City was kosher meat and poultry.
Wow. So it was a rough business to be in. I mean, without any question, if you didn't follow the company line, it wasn't that they just reprimanded you. They just could gun you down and kill you. Wow. Amazing.
There were people found at the bottom of the East River who, you know, bucked the kosher poultry distribution system.
Wow, incredible, incredible. So along the way comes the Lone Ranger, who's Rabbi Alexander S. Rosenberg, rabbinic administrator of the OU Kosher from 1950 to 1972, a monumental figure who I think people don't even understand what he did and how he changed kashrus in America forever. So let's talk a little bit about Rabbi Rosenberg and what he did and what he contributed.
Well, the OU Kosher Division was actually founded by the OU Women's Division in the 1920s, and it was headed by a man named Goldstein, who later went on to actually, interestingly enough, found the OK Kosher Laboratories, which today has been passed on to the Levy family, and they run OK Kosher. But the OU was originally founded, as I said, the Kosher Division in the 1920s. Rabbi Alexander S. Rosenberg came to the fore, and he became the head of the Kosher Division in 1950. And he transformed not only the OU kosher division, which had long roots and was already respectable, but he really transformed the kosher division, and he can't transform kosher as a whole. He remade the model for kosher certification in the United States. And the way he did this is he professionalized kosher, and he created a professional staff, and he decided that it was no longer supposed to just be the local rabbi who was doing supervision, but that mashkichim should be properly trained, and they should be supervised, there should be professionalism. And he also brought in management controls. He created a central administration, and he had fees for kosher supervision no longer paid directly to mashkichim. They were paid to the OU, and the mashkichim earned the same salary whether or not they were being paid to supervise something that was considered kosher, or if something turned out treif, they got paid the same. So he removed a lot of the conflict of interest. But perhaps the most important thing that Rabbi Rosenberg did, other than just professionalize and create management controls, he really sold kosher to mainstream American companies. He made kosher a regular feature of the American food system. And the way he did that is he went around to major American corporations and he said to them, I can give you kosher certification, and if you get kosher certification, you will sell more of your food products in the market. And they said to him, well, how's that possible? I mean, there aren't that many kosher consumers around the United States. He said, here's how it works. If I give you kosher certification that's reliable in a few key markets, in Brooklyn, New York, in Northside, Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Atlanta, in Baltimore, in Miami, in certain neighborhoods where there are lots of Jews, more people will buy your product. And when more people buy your product in those neighborhoods, the product will move from the bottom of the shelf to the middle of the shelf. And the name of the game in food marketing, Rabbi Alexander Rosenberg knew, was shelf space. That is, if you walk into a supermarket, you want to buy a cake mix or a box of cereal, if you don't know what you're going to buy, you're more likely to buy a box that's in the middle of the aisle at 5'5", right at eye level. And so Rabbi Alexander Rosenberg said, if you get kosher certification in those key neighborhoods, they'll move your cereal or your cake mix to the middle of the shelf. And sure enough, when they move it to the middle of the shelf, in those neighborhoods, those are key trendsetters, they'll move it to the middle of the shelf around the country. And that's exactly what happened. For example, Rabbi Rosenberg went to Duncan Hines, and he gave them kosher certification. And Duncan Hines cake mix moved from the bottom of the shelf to the middle of the shelf, and not just in Brooklyn and Chicago and L.A., but around the country. And they saw a jump in their sales of 40% in 6 months after they got kosher certification.
Wow, incredible.
And Senator, after Rabbi
even though
Rosenberg...
But you're saying that even though the market was really not a big market in other places because it was already done in one place, they just followed suit.
In other words, let's say there's a small Jew community,
not a big community where there are not a lot of Jewish people, though the people who own the stores were basically taking the Duncan Hines product and putting it in the middle of the shelf, even though it really didn't make that much of a difference in, whatever city we're talking about, Dallas, Texas, okay?
Yeah, so the way it works is that if Duncan Hines is selling big in New York City, Chicago, and L.A., supermarkets around the country are going to follow that trend, and they're going to put Duncan Hines in the middle shelf. Now, when they put Duncan Hines in the middle of the shelf, not only are kosher consumers seeing that, but everybody's seeing that. So in the market in Dallas, if Duncan Hines is in the middle of the shelf, everybody who's looking for cake mix is more likely to buy Duncan Hines. So there's a ripple effect that goes well beyond the Jewish community. If you get kosher certification, your product is going to get more prominent shelf space. And once it gets more prominent shelf space, it's going to sell better among all consumers, not just kosher consumers. And Rabbi Rosenberg understood this so well, and he sold this idea to American companies, and today, every single major American food company, if they bring out a new product, nobody brings out a new product in the consumer market today without kosher certification, and that's because of Rabbi Rosenberg.
It's really, really unbelievably amazing. I mean, I've read so much about him. I know Rabbi Beryl Wine, who you quote in the article, talks about, you know, like... That he was always working for God, and he was working for the Jewish people. And he tells a great story about that. We don't have time to go into it now, but he tells a great story about Rabbi Rosenberg. But now he was also, he was actually a rabbi of a shul in Yonkers, wasn't he?
That's right. He was a rabbi of a shul. He was also a very important figure in the founding of the RCA. And he was, as I said, really a foundational figure in the OU kosher division in building the modern kosher system. And I would say the thing about Rabbi Rosenberg that is so important to understand is there were really two things that he brought together. One is, as you mentioned, he was a deeply religious man who was committed to kashrus and to really spreading the idea that kosher food can be available for everybody. And at the same time, he had a very keen understanding of business. He understood food marketing. And he matched his deep religious commitments to a really clear and original understanding of how food marketing works. And that combination is what gave us the modern kosher food system.
Well, I tell you, there's no question that is an amazing accomplishment, because today, you're right. I mean, today, it's not that every single company is kosher, but most companies today that can be kosher certainly look to get kosher supervision. And even though, the Jewish population is not that large, but today it's been, spread out to people who observe, kosher standards and people who don't want to eat things which have lactose intolerance and other things. And so the market has grown and grown, and now gluten, the market continues to grow. And because of that, we're all the beneficiaries of it, which is really tremendous. How did you get involved in this? I mean, you're a professor of law at law school, and so what piqued your interest to get involved in the whole kosher industry?
You know, I'm interested in looking at private sector alternatives to government regulation.
Okay.
Most
good.
Of us think that most of our food safety or food labeling is regulated by the government, when in fact, a lot of our lives are regulated by private organizations. And a great example of this is Kashrus. Kashrus is a system that makes sure that the food that we buy in the supermarket is labeled properly and doesn't have any impure or non-kosher ingredients. And that's a system that does exactly what the government tries to do in other areas like food safety or other kinds of consumer protection, but it's totally private. And the more I understood about it, the more I realized this is not a small enterprise. The kosher market is a $12 billion market. There are 12 million kosher consumers in America. That is people who specifically purchase kosher food because it's kosher certified, and only 8% of those people are from Jews who eat kosher all the time. So most of the people buying kosher are relying on it because it's a reliable system of certification. And, you know, people should know more food in America is labeled kosher than is labeled organic, natural, or premium all put together. So this is a very significant example of a private sector alternative to government regulation that works extremely well. We have kosher food laws around the country in 22 states, but the states aren't really protecting us from kosher fraud. What's protecting us from kosher fraud is the modern kosher certification system, and that's a private system.
Right. There was an article, I'm sure you saw that article once in Forbes magazine about that.
Absolutely.
And that was a great, I remember picking up Forbes magazine and seeing this big OU on the Forbes magazine, and exactly the premise you're talking about was what they're talking about, that you have the UL or you have other things like that, which are basically private organizations, which, are the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, those kind of things, saying that that's exactly what's happened. And I guess you think that's a healthy thing for the society to have private regulations that kind of governs what goes on, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the book that's really the basis for the article in Jewish Action, the book is called Kosher,
right,
Private Regulation.
Right. I was going to ask you about
food.
Your book, right? Kosher, Private Regulation in the Age of Industrial Food. Right.
That's right. So the basic premise of the book is, if you really understand how kosher works, kosher is a model for private sector alternatives to government regulation. And that doesn't mean we want private regulation instead of the government. It's that there are a lot of things that we want regulated that are too big for the government to do alone. There's too much, the food system is too big for the government to protect us from kosher fraud. And the book talks about the history of that, that the state of New York and the state of New Jersey tried to protect us from consumer fraud. It's just too big a problem, and we needed a private sector assistance for that. The same is true, however, once you understand the kosher model, you can use that kosher model to build more reliable private regulation in things like food safety audits, which can protect us from adulteration of food. Now, the government does a good job, but it can't stop all of the food poisoning in America. We need a private system to complement the government system, and the model for that, of how to do a private system that complements a government system, is kosherous. The same is true in fire safety. The same is true in consumer protection. There are any number of areas where the job is just too big for the government alone, and we need a private sector alternative to help. And kosherous is one of the best examples in our economy of a system that works. It's reliable, it's transparent, and consumers get what it is that they're counting on.
So how do you, when you look down the road, what do you see kosherous, what is going to look like in 5 years or 10 years from now?
I think the kosherous market is growing, and that's because the food market's growing. There are more products out there. So the increasing number of products is likely to increase the amount of certification we see. Another thing to keep in mind is it's not just the number of products, but the complexity of products. So that as the food system becomes more industrial and there are more ingredients in our food, it used to be, you know, you buy a gallon of ice cream, it's got milk, cream, sugar, and a flavoring.
Right.
Now you buy ice cream, if you look on the contents, it's got 25 or 30 ingredients. All of those ingredients need kosher certification. So the demand for certification is going to increase. And I actually think as there's more demand, there's more competition among certifiers, and the competition is good. It's good in the following sense. The OU or the CUFK or the CRC are dependent on each other for ingredients that are kosher certified. And so they need to make sure that each of the other agencies provides reliable certification for the ingredients that they're using in the products that they're certifying. So the competition and the interdependence of these different agencies is good for the consumer. It protects the consumer. And, you know, the OU has really been the leader in this because the OU has fostered competition and they've fostered cooperation and common standards. And Rabbi Ganach, who's the current rabbinic administrator at the OU, has really ramped up the standards for professionalism and for oversight, not only in the OU, but industry-wide. And so the consumer's really the winner as the kosher market grows. And as this model continues to grow and be more successful, I hope that there will be some spillover effects into other areas of private regulation throughout the economy.
So what other areas do you think are really ripe? You said like certain fire safety. Pick the one industry now that you think it's ripe to have this kind of private enterprise.
So, you know, one of the things that's going on in the American consumer market is more and more people want to know about how their products are produced, in particular their food. So I don't know if you've noticed, but on a lot of foods, there's a little mark that says fair trade. Or a lot of foods, there's a little mark that says sustainable agriculture. Or there are a lot of foods there, or clothing, that there's a fair labor certificate. Organic is another one. People want labels on food that assure them that it's produced in an ethical way. And they call this eco-labeling, whether ethical means environmental or labor standards or sustainable agriculture. And one of the problems, of course, is that not all of these labels are trustworthy, but consumers want them. And as this market for ethically produced products increases, I think we're going to see an attempt to try and figure out how to make it more reliable. And if you want to know how to make it more reliable, a great model for this is kashrus.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true, for example, in other areas of product safety. If you want certification that a product is baby safe or doesn't have lead paint in it, you're going to see certifications on products. The question is, are they reliable? And in order to make them reliable, you need to take lessons from the history of kashrus. You need to understand how it is that professionalization and management oversight and creating a consumer market will really help to make the private certification of products more reliable. So I think we're going to see it actually in a wide variety of areas. I should mention also, this is not a new idea. I mean, kosher goes back 100, 150 years in the United States, but so too do other examples of this. You mentioned the UL and fire safety. If you look on your toaster oven or your computer or any electrical appliance you have or the wiring in your house, there's a little Underwriters Laboratory, UL, seal on that. That's a fire safety seal, and that also goes back to the late 1870s. And that's another example of successful private certification. And in fact, you have a new article that now tries to compare the development of the UL and fire safety with the development of the OU and kashrus, and you find that they share a lot of these characteristics about professionalism and oversight and consumer markets. And so in some ways, this is an old idea that's been honed and, you know, strengthened, and I think it's really ripe to improve a lot of the examples that we see elsewhere in the economy that aren't yet as reliable as kashrus or fire safety certification.
Beautiful. Absolutely fantastic. Well, listen, is it Dr. Litton, by the way?
Or is it Professor Litton.
Professor Litton. So, you know, I think the article is fascinating, and I think you've done a great thing having everybody understand the greatness of Alexander Rosenberg, who was a transformative figure. And now everyone out there, hopefully, now this book, is your book out already? The Kosher Private Regulation?
Yes, the book was published in April by Harvard University Press. It's available on Amazon.com.
Okay, great. It sounds like a very fascinating and interesting book. And I appreciate your coming on the program. And hopefully the people who are reading your article, you know, in the Jewish Action and perhaps reading it online, you know, I'm sure they're going to come in and listen to the interview and get to hear what you have to say. Terrific. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.